What's good, listeners? Welcome to the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show. Good morning, Marissa. How's it going, fam? What's cooking up? How you doing?
No, things are going good. I'm going to meet up with my nieces who are out here from Arizona today for lunch down by Disneyland. Yes, I won't be going in Disneyland because it was $363 without parking for one day for two people.
Isn't it kind of spring break outside? Spring break's kind of kicking in early for some cats. So yeah, you know, it's kind of the tussle. But you know what? Maybe that's why we're starting to see those sun rays. Maybe your cousins are giving you the good vibes, your friends.
They brought the Arizona sun to us.
That's right. That's so cool. And I know we always want to start off the show with things that are kind of circulating across the web this year. And believe it or not, MLB opening day is literally starting next Thursday. And you guys might remember this iconic moment that happened 22 years ago on this day. Randy Johnson literally demolishing a bird. Do you remember that, Marissa, when that happened in real time?
I actually do remember that. And it was a dove, which is like supposed to be the bird of love and peace and good luck. And I'm like, well, he's got bad luck coming now.
Well, you know, it's so amazing. Like, Randy Johnson was like, I remember as a kid, like, everybody's like kind of like favorite athlete growing up. He was so like long and like just kind of like abnormal looking, stepping on the pitching mound. And then when he delivered that pitch, I mean, that's going to forever follow him. But did you know that Randy Johnson actually is still working to this day in some capacity of the sports world? He's actually an NFL photographer.
Oh.
So you might be able to see.
I would not have gotten that. I would have been like behind the scenes, helping run a team, doing some pitching. I just was like, wouldn't have thought of photography.
Yeah, I guess that was like an old passion of his that he discovered at a later time. And I'm with you, but I would have thought he would have stuck with baseball. But maybe when you play the game that you love and you admire since you were a lee little wad, you know, you're probably not going to want to invest all your time into the baseball world. You want to venture out, go meet some new faces, some new stars, a new field of destination. And also, I wanted to reference this at the top of the show since you are an actress, Marissa. What are your thoughts on Paramount in the works with an Alfred Hitchcock remake? Vertigo, starring Robert Downey Jr.
Love it. Love it. Yep. I love Alfred Hitchcock.
That's something that we're definitely going to be.
I love Robert Downey Jr. I'm all for it. And bring it back. Scare me. Let's do this.
If they can pull it off. I mean, I get fearful. I mean, Alfred Hitchcock, I feel like, is like a gentleman that you just never touch his work. We want to preserve it. But then that's the thing. We're going to be bringing that up with an amazing guest lineup that we got this Friday on the Chris Collins Show Millennial Talk Show. But there are a lot of remakes and remasters happening in the video game industry, just like how there is in television and film. And it seems like the video game industry gets a hall pass, and not so much when it comes to the entertainment landscape of visual medium. And since I'm already kind of hyping up who's coming on the show, let's get it, fam. Our guest joining us on Just Talking is Henrik the Wreck, my co-host of video game talk show Rage Quit, as well as director of community development at Ubisoft. That is Dan Mitry. And we got a double whammy. And what I mean by double whammy is we got Dan Mitry coming on not one segment, but two segments. He's also in a kick-ass punk rock trio. They're called Distortions, and we're going to be talking about their EP. It's called Flies, out now wherever you listen to music. And also check out my music podcast series called Off the Fret, more music talk, featuring Nashville country star Amanda Cooksey, out now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. But you know what, Marissa? It is time to rock and roll. What's good, listeners? Joining us on Just Talking is Director of Community Development at Ubisoft. That is Dan Mitry, including my co-host of video game talk show Rage Quit, Henrik the Wreck, live on the Chris Collins Show Millennial Talk Show. How's it going, fam?
Woo, woo, woo!
Especially on my TikTok. Hang on.
Get that TikTok, Mitry.
So you're one of the half the nation that's completely involved on TikTok. And I know Henrik the Wreck, and including the CCS families on there. What do you guys have to say about this potential nationwide ban that might be happening to all Americans?
You know, I don't think it's going to happen, honestly, considering just like a kid who gets banned from being able to get cookies from the cookie jar, Americans are going to find some way to access TikTok if they ban it.
I think that's a good point, especially considering how, like, every single, like, leaked video game or even movie or television that's already in the theaters right now. Like, I wouldn't be amazed that John Wick 4 is already online for anybody to watch it without even having to buy a movie ticket. So, yeah, I think there are some firewalls that you could break through. What do you think, Dan?
Haven't we tried to ban mature video games in the U.S. here already? Like, why are we now trying to ban a social network in which its usage comes down to the users? And like, to Marissa's point, to good parenting, right? Like, yes, we're going to find a way to do this. Plus, it drives way too much money.
So true.
And that's the bottom line, peeps. That's the bottom line. Businesses are making money on it. And look, if the government is so worried about China spying on the government officials, you know what? Then ban government officials from being on it. We don't have to ban me.
Yeah, we can ban on their government devices. So true.
The president off TikTok, all right?
I mean, I guess we'll leave it at this final note. Congress is still using fax machines. So the fact that they're actually going to be having a say in TikTok, I think that speaks for itself. But let's go back into video games, because that's what we're here for on Just Talking. And the 2023 BAFTA Games Awards are due to take place on Thursday, March 30th, and speculation about who is going to win is already heating up. And what's really cool about this event is there are over 45 different game titles that are nominated this year with 18 different categories. Whether 45 different game titles deserve to be nominated is a question that we will be asking. But let's go ahead and showcase the first award, Marissa, on the screen as our we have the EE Game of the Year. Only award voted for in the public. And so anybody that's tuning in right now, you can get your voice heard. But I want to know from Dan Mitri and Henrik the Wreck, when you see these six games listed on screen, what is your choice for EE Game of the Year?
Henrik, we see a lot of the same games that are from the Game Awards. And I mean, we saw that one with Elden Ring. So I'm going to say Elden Ring for sure.
Is that really choice. How you feel?
Oh, of course. Of course. That game was talked about for months, Chris.
That's true. But, you know, they are in a little bit of trouble, you know, considering how Archangel Studios kind of clapped back because, you know, Archangel Studios is being accused of stealing, you know, digital assets, you know, that mimic some of the skeleton play that's in Elden Ring. So will that play a factor? We'll see what's good. But when it comes to you, Dan Mitri, what is your EE Game of the Year?
Oh, man. I mean, like Henrik was saying, Elden Ring just took us over by storm, right? Like, and if you love that Dark Souls gameplay and that just that relentless just punishment, Elden Ring was your game. But Stray looks awesome. Stray was one of my PS5 launch titles that I was looking forward to. But honestly, I'm a God of War sucker. Like, come on. The first God of War was awesome. Ragnarok, just as bad.
I don't even play video games, and I love God of War.
See, I was waiting for somebody to say God of War, because we keep talking about this, like, quote-unquote Mount Rushmore of iconic video game characters, and to see that this badass sequel to, you know, the last one, I'm amazed that none of you guys referenced that game first. Like, Elden Ring definitely takes on the nod, because I know with the BAFTA Games Awards, God of War leads with 15 nods, making it the most nominated game in the history of the BAFTA Awards. But you guys are saying that
it's the Beyonce of BAFTA Awards.
Exactly. That's a good point. Beyonce has never won an album of the year at the Grammys, but she's considered the most nominated artist of all time. So are you guys saying that Elden Ring's going to come in and spoil the party?
No, I think that was God of War, man.
I mean, God of War won a lot of awards in the Game Awards as well. So, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they walk away with a handful of them at least. So,
okay, all right, fair enough. Well, hey, Marissa, let's go ahead and showcase the best game that's up here. So we have Cult of the Lamb. I wasn't really too sure what that game was. I was quite surprised to even see Marvel Snap up there and Vampire Survivors. But looking at this, it seems like everybody's in cahoots. Are we all screaming Elden Ring?
Oh yeah, definitely. At least I am.
Then we don't even need to discuss that topic because it seemed like everyone
was on it. Did you say that Stray, your company helped put that out?
Oh no, mine. No,
no, no.
Oh, I thought you said that. Okay.
No, no, no. That's a totally separate entity. But, you know, I played Stray. It's a great game. It's a lot of fun. But let's go ahead and skip because we don't want to stay forever on the BAFTAs. But I do want to discuss one of the last topics. We'll do the multiplayer as well. We can have some fun with this. When I look at the whole scope of this, I was quite surprised to see Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles up there. But unless anybody played that game, I slept on it. But I kind of have a feeling this might go to EA Sports FIFA 23, considering how they're about to be moving away from EA, and FIFA's going to be starting up their own video game franchise. So this is considered an end of an era. But I want to know from Dan Mitri and Henrik the Wreck, what do you guys got?
Dude, I was all over that Turtles game. Totally. You got to play that, dude. Great side scroller. Feels good. Feels like the arcade Turtles in time.
Really?
I love it.
Oh
yeah,
so
you're missing out, Chris. That game was great. Like, my friends and I love that game.
Okay, fair enough. See, I honestly thought that was the sleeper, but we got two.
Hold on. We got a comment. It is EA Recycled Garbo, dude. Same game as 2005.
Okay. Is that not what sports games are? It's just a roster update. Come on now.
Yeah, come on, man. What a hater, Zach.
Don't change a diaper.
Yeah, don't change a diaper. Hey, but let's go ahead and do a performer in a leading role, Marissa. We'll do that as our final topic. The reason why I want to bring this up is 9 out of the 12 people named in the performer categories, including the supporting role, are among this year's first-time nominees. It seems like a lot of people have Christopher Judge as the favorite, but I want to know, do you guys have anybody that might be able to kind of jab with Christopher Judge when it comes to Kratos?
You know what? I'm going to have to say Christopher Judge really knocked it out of the park in God of War. And I think that compared to the other people, I know they were great also, but you can't really compare, really.
What about you, Dan?
Not at all. He has that kind of voice where you put him on a mic, you have to filter out the lows. Like, it's just this booming, boy. And his performance across all of God of War was incredible. My vote goes to Christopher Judge.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. When you show up at the Games Award, not the BAFTA Awards, and you hold down for the longest speech of all times, surpassing even in the Academy Awards, yeah, I have a feeling that they're going to easily give it to Christopher Judge. But you know what? Let's start to switch gears because Dan, Henrik the Wreck, and I discussed on Rage Quit, our video game talk show, some of the most anticipated games of the year, and we noticed a trend. Many of the games are remakes and remasters of older games. And it always seems like in the video game world, they get a hall pass compared to television and cinema. People are so sick and tired of seeing their beloved artwork get remastered. So are you a fan of studio developers revisiting the past?
I am, where it makes sense. You know, from a development standpoint, there are a lot of efficiencies. The skeleton's already there, and we are upgrading to a next-gen platform with new graphics, with new features, but there's a challenge. You're up against some nostalgic factor. Can you develop a experience that not only has something fresh, but pays homage to the experience that we all loved? And we've seen some games do that very well. We've seen some games tank at it. Dead Space Remake. Awesome remake. Visceral Studios did an awesome job on that one. I got to work on Battlefield 5 back in the day, which could be considered a sequel to 1942. And that one was a tough one. You know, like, you had a lot of nostalgic memory and feeling on 42. But I think where it makes sense is, does it make sense from a development standpoint? How much cost does it have? And is there affinity for it still? Is there an appetite for it? Don't do it just for the sake of padding your catalog. Mm-hmm. Do it for the sake of the community.
I think that's a good point. And
fire! Henrik, that needed to be on TikTok. That was a TikTok statement.
So, Henrik, get it on there. Yeah, right. So, Henrik, how do you think studios can balance catering to like nostalgic fans while also creating something new and authentic to a wider audience?
Well, like, for example, a remake that I'm really looking forward to is the System Shock remake. Unfortunately, it did get delayed a little bit more, but that game, when it first came out, for example, it had tank controls. meaning you didn't even have mouse support. You were just all playing on the keyboard the entire time. You were moving, you were using the arrow keys. To update that to the new conventions of gaming where you have keyboard and mouse support and just the graphics overhaul in general, like I think that that in itself is kind of what Dan is talking about, where it's like, it makes sense to remake this if there's an aptitude for it, because that game came out so long ago that it just doesn't even, no one's going to play it. No one's going to go back and try and play that.
Okay, I hear you, Henrik the Wreck, but I guess that kind of goes off of what I was saying at the top of the show. Paramount is working on a remake for Vertigo, which is Alfred Hitchcock's film. And I feel like that's a film you just don't touch. So, like, are you saying that there's certain older games that, yes, you should revisit, and then there's some that, you know, like, I don't know. Like, I felt like when they revisited GoldenEye, it was like, really? Do we really need another update on this?
Yeah, I would say, at least when it comes to movies, there are some remakes that are better than the originals, I will say. Now, Alfred Hitchcock's a little hard to be better than, because he's such a legendary filmmaker.
He cannot be better. His movie will always be iconic, will always be
exactly.
There.
Thank you, Marissa.
But I love the fact that they're going to bring it back, put a spin, make it for people who, A, I'm telling you now, I work with a woman. I love her to death. She's 22. They've just turned 23. Doesn't even know who Alfred Hitchcock is.
Okay. Oh, no, these damn Gen Zers.
You know what I mean? Take down. You could take this. They could all of a sudden find a love for it. And then Google Alfred Hitchcock. Oh, wait, here's an original. And then we can open up some more eyes to some vintage classics.
Can we establish the best remake of all time here? Best remake of all time. Evil Dead 2. Come on.
Ooh, I love Evil Dead 2.
That was a good one.
Bomb remake. I'm going to go with you on that one. You never go wrong with zombies.
But it does seem like the hype train is real for Resident Evil 4, so we'll see what's good. But you know what? I definitely want to bring this up since you guys are both heavily involved in the video game industry, and that is the Olympics elevating esports to the main stage with its first ever Olympic esports series without any actual esports games. So what are your thoughts on the committee's decision to exclude video games that promote violence, such as League of Legends, Battlefield, Call of Duty, from the Olympic Games?
So I'm stoked that we have Just Dance. That's an Ubisoft title. I'm very honored to be working closely with that and the teams on that. And that paves way. Like, it makes sense. You are in a very active, moving sort of, that can be considered a sport. Absolutely. Have you tried DDR? After three songs, I feel like I just ran a marathon. Just Dance the same way. But let's talk about Olympics, right? The Olympics is a E for everybody entertainment, right? This is syndicated across the world, across different networks and streaming, and it needs to be something that all ages can consume. Why would you put a mature rated title in front of an E-rated program? Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense.
I agree with that.
Yeah,
but you don't want to be that definitely. Parent that actually does parent sitting there with their kid and be like, oh, whoa, 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 blowing off heads. Here's my 5-year-old. Great.
Well, what do you say to the some gamers that are arguing that the exclusion of violent video games, such as, you know, Call of Duty, Battlefield, and League of Legends, for example, is a form of censorship and that it limits, you know, artistic and creative expression? I mean, what is your response to that?
I'm interested to see what Henrik thinks. From an outside standpoint, yeah.
Yeah, so, Henrik, what do you think?
I mean, I would say, you know, yeah, it is for a lot of gamers going to be disappointing that, you know, you don't have games like League of Legends or Call of Duty in the Olympics esports, because when a lot of gamers think esports, they think those games, you know, like those have leagues where people compete for real money as is. But it does make sense, you know, looking from like Marissa's point of view as a parent. Like, if I'm watching the Olympics and the esports segment comes on and all of a sudden you have a Call of Duty scene playing, like, that, maybe we got to go watch something else.
Look,
because,
you know, players clean up their act in the Olympics. Okay.
That's true. And
You don't see as much fighting. You don't see as much blood. You know what I mean? They even clean it up for the Olympics, right? We have a regular esports. You guys already have stuff for that. This is the Olympics.
But
like
Dimitri
said, it's on a platform. This is amazing.
But it sounds like you guys are saying that violence in video games have real world consequences.
No, I am not. It comes down
I'm not
to
saying that.
It comes down to proper psychological health, and that's a whole other show right there, talking about the mental health and the support we provide our children and the our peers and stuff. But look, esports is, in all intents and purposes, defined as any game that is played competitively. And hey, if you throw in money behind it, you throw in some sort of prestige, I'm going to have to say Just Dance and Tennis Clash are just about to be in esports.
Yeah. Ooh. No, I hear you on that one. You know, but my personal feeling is, after watching the World Baseball Classic, didn't that kind of feel like war? I mean, when we had, you know, Mexico and Japan going at it, I mean, that was a bloodbath. And then once we got Japan and USA together, I felt like that was the kind of intensity that we could use in the esports series. Because when I see a mobile device game like Tic-Tac-Boe that's only been available for like less than 2 months on the Olympic stage, how does that get anybody hyped up? And so, since we're like talking about the whole esports and everything, since it is kind of becoming a permanent fixture in the Olympics, do you believe that esports players will be held to the same standards as a traditional athlete when it comes to like drug testing, fair play, and regulation in the game?
Yeah, I think
I would hope so.
Really? Because I like to think that every game.
Just because they're doing esports doesn't mean they're not athletes. We had this conversation on one of my shorts that I worked with you, Chris, where Shaq was saying, yeah, these esports athletes are definitely athletes just like sports athletes. They have the same amount of rigorous training that they have to go through as regular athletes.
What was the documentary that followed the a team of esport people, and it showed that like how well they had to eat, and they had physical trainers to help them so they weren't just sitting there. They had to physically move and do it, and making sure they're having the right water and the nutrients. I was just going to say,
Marissa, most gamers don't watch a documentary about
that. I watched it.
They actually participated in the games. So what about you, Dan? Do you think they're going to start getting drug tested? Because I feel like, you know, the sex, drugs, and rock and roll carries in with the gaming world. I mean, I feel like nobody plays good if they're not at least on a little bit of some energy or boost.
So look, in a past life, I ran a company called New Wave Esports. We invested in esports leagues, tournament operators, teams, and many of those teams and leagues did drug tests. And that is a real thing. Like, you cannot have a stacked advantage over someone else because you're on Adderall or you're crushing something that's completely illegal, right? And that does not send the right message to people who watch esports too, our children, the people who love this thing. So no, I don't think it's appropriate to allow drug use in those sanctioned events. Now, are we talking about publishers and developers? I think we would all probably be out of a job at this point. So esports is a different arena here.
Okay, fair enough.
Are you crushing the Adderall in the back, Dan? Is that what you're saying?
Oh, like, oh, my God, name, Marissa. Oh my
God, a deadline. There he is.
Hey, so true on that. So, guys, definitely keep a lookout. The Olympics Esports Series is going to be happening on June 22nd and June 25th in Singapore. But we wanted to talk about this because Henrik the Wreck and I, on our video game talk show, Rage Quit, have been exploring how GPT-4 and AI is the talk of the town with gamers, you know, discussing its impact on the video game industry. And with AI in GPT-4 requires at all times internet connection, which brings this whole new plague that everybody's hating in the year 2023, where always online single player games are frustrating gamers and is sort of sounding the alarm on piracy. Should we be concerned, Dan? I mean, you are in, you know, the publisher side of the video game world.
So in terms of privacy and privacy for our users is specifically more that question, right?
Yes.
Yeah, no, we have a response. We have an obligation to keep our information private. Absolutely. And we take big measures to do so. You know, that is the reason why people trust us, and sharing their information with us really does help us craft better games, better services for them. And we need to keep that private. We need to keep that safe. Absolutely.
And Henrik the Wreck, I mean, as we've been exploring this on Rage Quit, I mean, what are ways that AI can analyze player data and feedback so that it can improve, you know, the game design and development?
Well, I see it as like, okay, if you're getting data like, okay, the players are going and talking to this NPC, or they're going to this area a lot, and maybe there's not as much as the developers really wanted to have in this area. Maybe AI could kind of, you know, flesh out that area a little bit better. Or, you know, that's just one example, maybe. Or maybe you could have a conversation with that NPC for longer than what was actually scripted by hand.
Intended for things like that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think that's a good point. But, you know, we have seen people manipulate GPT-4, you know, like we talked about a couple weeks ago on Digital Trend, the magazine company. They actually had, you know, the robot talk back and say, hey, you know, I want to be a human too. You know, you should dump your wife. You know, we're coming for you. So, Dan, when you see these kind of things, I mean, should there be any kind of ethical concern when it comes to game developers utilizing AI?
Well, let me augment Henrik's response here. We listen to a lot of different data when we develop our video games, both in a pre-development state, whether we're doing like workshops with players that give us direct feedback, or we're in a live state and we pull a lot of information from daily login sessions to telemetry data, like Henrik was saying, where are they congregating on a map? That stuff is information that we collect, and it is a part of the terms of use and that people accept when they install the games in our machines. Now, what do we do with that information? We have limitations in which we can do. Now, bringing in AI software to help us better interpret and conclude and draw some summaries off that data is something that we can do internally, but it's how we share that. And are we then providing that information to people, third parties, other private companies that people did not agree to, or maybe fishy, you know, there might be some loophole there. So that's where a good community policing comes in the force. And we've seen that before. We've seen communities push back, say, no, hey, big platform, social network with a blue icon, you cannot share my information.
The blue icon.
Yeah, exactly. Well, you know, because we are talking about GPT-4 and we're talking about AI, you know, a lot of people, were, you know, in written publications were stating that AI would be beneficial for gaming studio companies because they were claiming that probably half of the people that work in the gaming industry don't necessarily know how to program. They don't know how to code. They're not story writers. So they believe that AI will ramp up the process to actually bring their tiny idea that's on a piece of paper to life. Is that how you see the video game industry utilizing AI technology?
We're starting to see some of that now. You know, it does help some processes in creating assets and creating scripting, but there's always going to be a human element there. You know, you got to have the human connection there. So yeah, you've seen a big trend of like art being generated by AI, and I've seen some stunning pieces. We've seen some in-game assets being created to quickly spin up assets that we already have and want to augment that with certain script injections or keywords, and that does help make a better quality asset at the end of the day, because it's cheaper to do. Is that taking jobs from people? I think that's what we need to be concerned with.
Absolutely. And gentlemen, you guys have been awesome. And you know what, Dan Mitri, we definitely got to bring you on with Henrik the Wreck and I on our video game talk show, Rage Quit, one of these days, because you are such a bright and refreshing person to the gaming industry. We appreciate you. And Henrik the Wreck, I see you every Tuesday, so I already show all the love for you all the time. So I don't need a glute about you anymore. But gentlemen, thank you guys so much for joining Just Talking. What's good, listeners? Joining us live on Strike a Chord is North Carolina punk rock trio Distortions on the Chris College Show Millennial Talk Show. Also, check out my brand new episode of Off the Fret, More Music Talk, featuring Nashville country star Amanda Cooksey, out now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And don't forget to hit the notification bell and like and subscribe so you never miss a live show. So let's bring on the Motley Crue himself, Dan Mitri. He is the vocalist and guitarist of the group. So, Dan, how's it going, my man?
Oh, it's great to have. Thanks for having me back. This double feature has been awesome.
Dude, this double whammy party is so much fun. I feel like it's a deja vu. Deja vu.
Yeah. Well,
that just shows how talented you are on all scopes of entertainment. And I know that Distortions formed in the spring of 2021. And what brought all you guys together as a band?
Punk rock is very dear to my heart. And the punk rock community and the ethos that surrounds it is also something that I adopted, I subscribe to. It's a community that's built on lifting each other up, weeding out the negativity, and letting us live the way we want to live our lives through a celebration of diversity, inclusivity, and being compassionate with each other. And that is my motivation. And there just so happens to be a vehicle to get there and to live that every day, and that's through music. And I've always had this deep connection to just incredible riffs, that guitar sound that just makes you want to pick up a guitar and just like strum out a chord and speak your mind and express yourself in a musical way. And Distortions was born from that. It's a very passionate project. We talk about a lot of different themes, but we deliver it in a way that gets you moving. We go to these shows and we have our friends and fans come out, and these are just times when we need to connect with each other. We need to have that human relationship, and we have this communal energy in the air, and it's the spirit that we feed off of each other. That's what Distortions is doing. It's a community effect.
Yeah, and you guys glue together so well, and I know you partnered up with bassist Nick Jones, who's a former bassist for Bear and Shark, Bear versus Shark in Bars of Gold, along with your drummer, Andrew Winter, who was a former drummer for Blitzkid and Reckless Dodgers. So how did you guys first meet each other?
Well, I came out here to North Carolina and I said, all right, what's the punk scene look like here? Is there an opportunity to start bringing...
Yeah, is there a punk rock scene in North Carolina?
There definitely is.
Wow, there is. It is thriving, Chris. Marissa, you got to come out here.
I know.
Were you surprised when you showed up to North Carolina that there was a punk rock scene? Were you generally concerned at first?
Yes, initially, because of some of the politics here in the state. You know, here in Raleigh, we're in a blue bubble, you know, and we have a lot of progressive thinking. Obviously, progressive left sort of thinking is synonymous with punk rock. And I came here, I'm like, oh, wow, this is incredible. There's a lot of LGBTQ movements here, a lot of advocates. We're helping each other on a daily basis with people, whether we're, you know, afflicted with addiction or having issues and challenges at home. We're here for each other. And I'm starting to sense that. And all the bands here are really in support of each other. We're not cutting each other down and talking shit to get ahead. We know
so
that.
So it's not LA. Because LA, I'm telling you, man, like people don't even go support their friends. They're like, nah, I'm not going to go out. I'm not going to see you, but I'll go pay $75.
Marissa, there was a tornado watch this week in LA. I think I'm good staying at home.
A one-day tornado.
Wait, like, do you remember like the initial spark, Dan, that like made you want to start creating music again?
Again, well, I've always had some sort of capacity of creating music, but yes, it was the summer of 2021, and I needed to get some internal turmoil out. And I knew that a lot of other people are feeling the same way. And if I can express that through a guitar chord, through a line, through working with Nick Jones on bass, or the phenomenal rhythm section that Andrew Winter brings in, us three are also working on some of our own stuff. And we're bringing that out through the music of Distortions. And you can hear it on the record. You can hear the deep emotion and passion behind it. But it's not until you see us live and you get to experience that in motion when you really like, wow, this it clicks. It makes sense.
Oh, I'm totally with you on that one, man. I love nothing a good beats sounding live, rock and roll band.
Live music. Nothing beats live music.
Nope. Oh, yeah, it's so true. And I know Distortions introduced their debut EP, Flies, in the winter of 2022 with a breed of contagious riffs and badass artwork created by you, Dan Mitry, which I think is super badass. And you guys explore dark themes, addressing the dichotomies of helplessness and hope, and has your perspective on existence changed over time when you guys created this record?
Not at all. Not at all. In fact, it's even more grounded. This is the path that we're going with Distortions, and that is addressing some very deep, strong, and foundational sort of things that we think about and deal with in our daily lives. So exclusive to the show, the meanings behind a couple of our songs It Came For Us is a song about battling depression and the demons that just that cover us on a daily basis, that just lash at our chest, But there's hope at the end of the day, that we can persevere and we can endure, and that there is a reason to continue forward.
Awesome. I don't mean to keep cutting you off, because you kind of made me think of this as you were talking. You know, can you describe a time where you felt helpless but found hope?
Yes, absolutely. I want to say over the past 3 months, I've lost a lot of good friends to cancer, to suicide. I've left a lot of other things have been happening. And there's a deep, dark, crippling depression that happens at the center of your soul and the people around that are affected by that. And you miss these people. And those are the demons that scratch at me and get me to question my own existence and my own happiness. But it's also what fuels me, because I don't know if tomorrow's promised. So I'm going to go do everything that I can. And every single time I get in front of that mic and get my guitar on, it's like the first time I've ever done it.
Yeah, and so, for like our listeners that do battle with depression or currently battling it, what advice do you have for that they can do to try to beat that demon? I mean, we know pick up music, listen to it, but like, what else are you doing specifically when you're unable to pick up that guitar or jump on stage to get you through that day to day?
For me, it's self-compassion, knowing that, hey, dude, we all feel this. We're all going through this stuff, and give myself a little more leeway. Like, it's okay to feel this way. You can't always be Superman. You can't always be chipper the rest of the way the world wants you to be, especially if you're in a demanding job. You got to be cheery and stuff. No, that's not being human. We feel happiness just as much as we feel sad, and we need the balance between the two, because it gives significance to both. So giving yourself that self-compassion and then pouring out to the people that love you, don't be afraid to do that. That's why people are here for us.
Community.
I love that message.
Community peeps, 100,000%. It saved me.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I know, Dan, Distortion and its label, Bored to Death Record, are independently run by MAM members, and it was created essentially with you and more cats in the scene. Am I correct on saying that?
Yes, correct. Yeah. So we released Flies, our EP, through Bored to Death Records, and it's also owned and operated by myself. And Bored to Death Records is that conduit. So the bands are the vehicle here, and Bored to Death is collecting the bands that have that same mentality, that want to contribute to the punk rock community and give more than we take. And so what I'm trying to do with Bored to Death is establish a little bit more, one step at a time, that community that we need to help to battle with our own afflictions. And there's a certain quality to it too. You know, we're pure DIY. We get to call the shots the way we want to. And that's the way I want my artists to feel too, that you're not going to be pressured to push sales on an album or pack out a show. That's what DIY punk is all about. It's the feeling, it's the journey along the way. That's
Because I'm starting to notice a trend heavily where it seems like a lot of veteran artists are now starting to create their own independent record labels or releasing music on their own. And why is it that, you know, young groups are still sticking with established labels compared to branching out and doing their own thing? What are you seeing that's evolving now in the year 2023?
Well, there's a lot of support and services that a traditional label would provide that a lot of people don't have access to. First of all, like, it costs a lot of money to properly record and mix and master a song. You may not have that capital. It costs a lot of money to promote and market your shows and your album and who you are and build your social channels. And you may not have the capital for that, or the support, or the knowledge to do it. And that's where a good label comes in and provides that. Now, if you're on a major label, you've got a lot more stressors. You're signing a pretty big contract. You've got making a lot of commitments. And at that point, you've got a pretty good product, your music that has some sort of backing. But if you're going to join like independent label like DIY, like Bored to Death, we have a different philosophy behind things. We want to grow with you. And we're going to use what you have, the resources that you have, but also bring in where you're weak. And we're going to do this together.
Yeah, and like, how had starting your own record label, Bored to Death, impacted the way that you approach making and releasing music, or has it not much changed?
Having my own label means that I have access to my own studio. I'm here in my mix room. Next to me is my blasting room. And I'm creating a network of other professionals between venue owners, promoters, other artists, other engineers to continue doing what we're doing. And we get to take the time that we want to really produce the best music that we can, not singles. We're producing albums. We believe in every track being banging.
Thank you!
Lame. I love my
Oh, Dan! Man. You were the first. I'm
you were going
sorry.
So good.
No, I'm sorry.
I was
this. You did not get to speak on this issue. I finally had someone who gets to agree with me after, like, how many freaking artists have we been talking with, Marissa, who have said we are leaving
if
the traditional
route.
If only
two people are saying one thing, you might need to relook at it.
Okay. Now, Dan, you just
look,
heard
I
what
love,
Marissa
I
said.
Love the album. I love the EP, and I think you should go into your music with that as your goal. And not just some random song. But Dan, there's nothing wrong with a little sneak peek single. Okay.
Yeah, Dan, bring the energy. Let Marissa know something that she needs to know as the listening and music experience when it comes to a full LP.
Let me delineate here. Usually a good single is a preview to a badass album.
That's right.
That's what it should be. Look at Sam I Am. Sam I Am has been releasing three singles and then collected it as an EP as a precursor to their new album dropping here at end of March. Oh, see, and I'm excited perfect. About it. Yes.
That's how singles should be used. No, really it should. Not just the one hit banger. And then when you put them together, you don't understand where the thought process or mind was behind it. That's called my Spotify playlist, right?
Yeah,
you know what I mean? But that's not an album. I still want to be teased.
But to be also fair too, that is one factor, Marissa, but we've also explored other artists who have utilized singles as being something that we only drop every 2 or 3 years. And one of the first bands I could think of who is dominating the Billboard charts consistently is Ronnie Radke with his band Falling in Reverse. He's got the support from Epitaph Records to not drop an album and to only drop one or two singles every 3 years. I hate it. And I want to know, do you see this as being the new mindset with not just in the rock and roll scene, but all genres of music?
As an artist, I want to write albums. As an artist, I have a lot to say. As an artist, I want to find the support, a label, some sort of deal where I can write an album. But I also recognize that the music industry is changing and our attention spans with the mass audiences or people who love music may be shortening too. And if you're looking for mass critical success, I hate to say, singles might be the way to go because it's a way that you can promote a specific entry in your catalog and put all the promotions behind that.
It's now, your calling card. Like,
it's a calling
hello,
card. Sure. I don't adopt to that model because I'm approaching it differently. I want to write albums.
Dad just gives you the whole entire address book. And he's like, listen to it.
Well, yeah. I mean, that is a good point. I mean, to play devil's advocate, I know last week, you know, Barry Mia, they were kind of explaining that, like, we don't like to drop a full album all the way. Or no, excuse me. It was the band Dead All Right.
Yeah.
He was talking about how he felt like when I drop a full length album, being a punk rocker, it just felt like there's so many songs that got missed out that weren't listened to. Is that something you should be concerned about?
If that's your goal. If that's your goal is to get the mass views across a whole album, I'm sorry, you're in for a rude awakening. That's just, it doesn't happen. Look at all of the punk rock bands or any major bands. You know, you look at those albums, look at the views on that. You got one or two songs that really are the singles, you know, that had some critical success and the rest of the album drops. That's what happens. And what I'm trying to do is form a connection with the core, the super fan, the one that listens to that album left and from A to Z, that identifies with that, that sings along to every song at the show. That's the super fan that I want.
That's right, baby. And since we are setting the tone right now, we have put together here on Strike a Chord a lyric video for your opening track that's called Castaways on your debut EP called Flies, which, by the way, Dan Mitri, badass artwork that you drew up. And we're going to be playing that song right now, called Castaways, live on the Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show.
Played it gone.
Rock and Roll, that is Distortion's single that is called Castaways, and you can find it on their debut EP, Flies. And Dan, we can't thank you enough for the double whammy show here on the Chris College Show, Millennial Talk Show. And what is your message for fans who can look ahead to the coming months when it comes to Distortion's?
We are working on some new material. We're working on a full album that we're going to be very, very proud about. And we've got a lot of shows happening here in the Triangle area. We've got some awesome shows coming up. One specifically on May 4th at the Pinhook. It's Star Wars Punk and Drag.
Okay.
Ooh, I wish I was there for that.
I've got three.
Who would have thought that we would ever hear Star Wars and Punk and Drag all in the same sentence?
It meshes beautifully.
Oh, it's a thing. May the 4th. So we're going to celebrate. I've got three beautiful queens coming out doing awesome drag acts between three awesome bands, Distortion's, Bonies, and Overgrown Throne.
Bomb. Hey, man,
sounds like quite the jam, my friend. And Dan Mitri, can't thank you enough, as always, for always coming on the Chris College Show. And much success to you and all your band members in the future, my friend.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah.
Thank you, Chris.
Thanks,
thank you,
Marissa.
Absolutely, Dan. And for everybody that's joining us live on the Chris College Show, Millennial Talk Show, stick around as we have more left. This is What's Good, because we want to set the tone. We want to let you guys hear something that is so impactful, so promising, so inspirational. And I love this story, because last weekend, Alex Rocha made history becoming the first person in the world with 76% disability to complete a marathon. So the Nike-sponsored athlete posted a triumphant, joyful video on Twitter, capturing the crowd's cheers as he worked down the final stretch of the Barcelona Marathon.
Primera persona del mundo con un 76% de discapacidad física en lograr una maratón. ¡Vamos!
And as you can see right here on the lower third, this cat, Alex, completed this marathon in 5 hours and 50 minutes. I don't know about you, Marissa, but it's going to take me more like 10 hours. In 50 minutes to complete a marathon. And the fact that, like, he ran 26 miles is totally insane. I got so much kudos for anybody that wants to put themselves through any kind of rigorous task like that. And
just, the LA Marathon just happened last Sunday.
Yeah, that's a very good point. And I mean, and to prove that, like, just because a disability might make some things difficult in your life, that, you know, to see this, very cool. Again, 76% disability to complete a marathon. Very cool. That's why Nike has you on your back. But we also want to say thank you, thank you, thank you to our jam-packed show that we had here today. My co-host of Video Game Talk Show, Rage Quit, Henrik the Wreck, joined us. Join us live every Tuesday as we do that show at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time on YouTube or wherever you're streaming this show currently right now today. And also Dan Mitri, who has an amazing new punk rock trio group called Distortion's. And you can check out their debut EP, Flies, wherever you listen to podcast and music. And also want to let you guys know that we got an amazing guest that's going to be joining us next week, because it is, after all, MLB opening day kicking off this Thursday, and we're going to be talking about all things sports with CCS sports contributor Kevin Drake. And also check out my music podcast called Off the Fret, More Music, More Music Talk, featuring Nashville country star Amanda Cooksey, out now on YouTube or wherever you listen to podcasts. And if you like what you're listening to, go to thechriscollegeshow.com, become a member today, and get that free CCS t-shirt. For now, enjoy the weekend, fam, and we'll see you next week. Peace. I wish you were here spending all your time. What's good? It's Chris from The Chris Collins Show, Millennial Talk Show, featuring Nashville singer-songwriter Amanda Cooksey, known for her breakup songs, crop tops, and TikTok covers, is a refreshing new voice in country music. Joins Off the Fret. More music talk. What's good, party people? Chris Collins Show presents Music Storm 2022, hosted by Chris Collins and Marissa Pitts, featuring Royals. There's got to be a better way. Hurricane Highway. Cannibal Kids. Amanda Cooksey. Astoria State. Kid Death. Resounding. Sleep Cycles. Avenues. Freckles. Weather Worn. Just True. Sophia Marie. Music Storm 2022. Available wherever you listen to podcasts. Our brand new podcast, Off the Fret.
I love it. It's more time to chat.
Hello.
You look so jazzy. I love your outfit.
How far would you go to start playing live music again?
This slaps harder than my ex when she got her stimulus check. So,
are you here to bring the sexual healing with your music? Oh, everything is everything, and I guarantee you're going to hear this song in the future. I love the flow, man. Politically charged album. So, if you get easily offended, this might not be the album for you. Brand new podcast, Off the Fret.
So excited.
Has Kim Kardashian accidentally sent you a coochie shot?
Do you want to stay there? It's completely your choice. Or you want to...
I feel you. And you know what I love? Off the Fret. More music talk. Peace. Yeah.